I got money on my bees, cause I'm gaining all these honeys. I got money is the virus, cause these niggas acting buggy. I got money.
I gotta say, it's nice hearing the intro before we kick it off. Hello and welcome everybody to the Genuine Content Podcast with your hosts Jay and Josh. Jay, you're here for another episode, man. How you been? What's going on?
Hey man, before I go that, you're right. This is the first time we're doing an actual video podcast. This is gonna be pretty cool, and we're using a totally different software, and it's actually pretty cool to hear the music first before we do it, because usually when I edit the music in here. So this is different. It was kind of hypes me up a little bit, but overall everything's good, man. Everything's slowly getting better, slowly adjusting life, keep making small moves here and there, but man, honestly, focus is all about basketball and some TV shows. I've been on a lot of TV shows lately. So what's going on with you?
Hey man, similar vibes, you know, things are going well, professional life, you know, very grateful for the opportunities I've had, you know, recently, just expressing a lot of gratitude there. Basketball has been big too. Actually funny, you know, we'll get into the topic of this episode in a minute, but I'm definitely going to need a little assistance after my Sixers got the L and a half the other day. That was some rough stuff.
At least your team's in the playoffs.
This is a fair point. And you had some early hype with the Kyrie trade, thinking him and Luka might actually do some things. It turned out to be a little dud, huh?
Man, after 10 games, man, I just hid in the closet. I already knew what was going to happen. I knew he was going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, that did not work out as planned, man. But that's all right. You know, we're all here to come together as a community and vent some of these things out. But welcome to our audience once again. This is another episode. And Jay, may the fourth be with you and to the audience as well and our listeners.
Yes.
This is a big time day for you.
May the fourth be with you, man. Oh, man. You can't beat the live.
You gotta chuck that one up to the live stream loopers.
Can't beat the live, but I got my Star Wars stuff, so it's all good.
Hey, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. So to our listeners, remember you can check us out on all major podcast platforms, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Now we're going to be on video for YouTube, so that's some very exciting stuff. Of course, Google Play, the general stuff, you name it, we're going to be on it. We're excited about this new platform, as Jay mentioned, and kicking this off and really expanding this podcast. So we really need your help to do that as well. And we appreciate every listen, every like, every review, every subscription. It all matters. It all helps out. So we appreciate that in advance.
And, you know, with this new platform, we're going to do some new stuff. So I know we've been doing the IG Live. We've done 3 IG Lives. And I mean, we won't be doing IG Lives for too much longer if everything works out. So it's very important, everyone, follow us on YouTube, because YouTube would for sure be our video platform of choice. YouTube Live is something we're working on. Cannot wait for that. So while IG Live was a good learning point, well, we're slowly going to move on to YouTube and such. So, and I know I got a lot of people who haven't listened to us yet, but every time I talk to them, it's always, man, if you had a video podcast, well, maybe I'll get in. So just giving what the people want. So hey. And with learning, so it's just a slow process. We're only in episode 7.
Yeah, continued growth, man. The road to 10, as we always like to call it. But we're excited to kind of make it to that way and get this thing on the road. Have some more video on deck. So definitely check it out as it comes. Of course, you can always follow us on our Instagram platform at Genuine _ content spelled with the K. You can see it if you're on the YouTube right now. Genuine Content Podcast on Facebook as well. We have a lot of good information, you know, in between episodes, some recaps, some takes, polls, a chance for the audience to get involved, all of our listeners to share their thoughts and their takes. So please do so and interact with us. You know, we're always available. We love this interaction. That's the primary part of the podcast and why we're here. So it's all about y'all. Jay, we've got a great episode for everybody today. This is the month of May, And May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And as I was speaking earlier, you know, the Sixers got me anxious as hell. So we need to talk about this.
All right. So to let everyone know, we do have a special guest. As for our video audience right now, you don't see her yet, but I will put her in, and then you'll get to meet Sheena Cooper. She is a licensed therapist. She's been someone I know in a professional level for years, known her for professionally and personal, and she's a really good person. I feel like she's one that when me and Josh even discussed this episode, we need someone, you know, who works in the field to really speak about this. First person I really thought of was Sheena. So I'm happy that she, you know, gave us the time to do this. And right now, let's put her in. Sheena, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Can't complain. It's another day.
Yes. Can't complain.
Absolutely. Pleasure to meet you as well. Jay said such glowing things, and so excited to get this conversation started.
All right. Let's get it.
All right. So, Sheena, why don't you give the audience a little background to, you know, yourself, you know, whether you want to talk about yourself personally, but definitely professionally. Okay. Since, you know, since the topic is mental health awareness.
Yes, for sure. Okay, so my name is Sheena Cooper. I am a licensed therapist or a licensed clinical social worker. I've been in therapy or in the field since 2011. Initially, I started working with or providing therapy to children ages 2 until about age 17, 18 years old. Since 2011. And in 2020, I actually started my own private practice during the height of the pandemic. So that has been something that I've actually always wanted to do as far as going into private practice. So I was really excited when I got a chance to do that. I'm also a Iraqi veteran. So I was deployed to Iraq in 2004, I feel like 2004. My years could be off, but I was a part of Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. So I did that I was in the military for about 8 years or so, deployed for about 13 months, maybe a little longer. So that's pretty much a short intro. I'm also a mother of a teenager. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for the introduction. Sheena, I know we haven't spoken personally in a while, but I am on your level now. I am a parent. I have a one month old daughter. Yeah. As of this past Wednesday, 1 month, baby Aaliyah. Oh, so
I'm sure she's adorable.
Oh, yeah. She has the lungs of the singer. I'll say that much. She
welcome. I hope you enjoy
it. So, thank you. So, like Sheena says, you know, she is a licensed clinical social worker. I can attest that private practice is something she really wanted to do. I think she said in 2020 she started her practice. I think I want to say we met at 2018, and we're both licensed clinical social workers, and she kept pushing me like, you need to do that. You probably should do that. We're in the same field, and me and she are like opposites to that. But it's good that this was her goal, and like in those 3 years we worked together, like, I mean, she made her goal happen. And even now, like, yeah. I was telling Josh off air, like, you know, Sheena's one that if I had some professional questions or advice, I was like, you know, me and Sheena still in contact. You know, we you know, talk business on the side.
Yeah, definitely.
So before we bring our example, I know you gave us a nice introduction. So why therapy? Like, why did you choose a therapeutic route?
You know, people always say, like, when you become not just a therapist, but a social worker, right? When you become a social worker, it's usually tied to some type of trauma that you've experienced growing up, or that you were essentially a part of. And that's kind of like your way of giving back, Why we always choose social work, why we tend to go that route, I do not know. But I feel like there's definitely some truth to that statement that we typically choose the social work route because of some traumas that we've experienced. And actually, growing up, I only had three options in my mind, right? So I've wanted to be a social worker, a police officer, join the military. Of course, that was one of them. But I also wanted to be a news anchor. Why? I do not know. But I wanted to be a news anchor. But I was able to check off, you know, being a social worker and then also joining the military. So I think because we just, you know, we like to help those that are not able to help themselves in some capacity. So I believe that's honestly why I wanted to go that route. And I felt like social work was very broad. So a lot of people don't essentially understand what it means to become a social worker or to major in social work. They tie it to the Department of Children and Families. They tie it to food stamps. They tie it to
taking your kids away.
Right. A CPI or API, removing kids. And I always knew that that wasn't the only route, but you can kind of get stuck in that field if you don't have, you know, a goal in mind. So trauma, I've definitely experienced that in the environment that I was raised in, you know, my neighborhood. And then also being deployed to Iraq, experiencing some of the things that we saw over there also kind of pushed me in that down that road. For sure.
Nina, wow, okay. Thank you for sharing that. I was definitely interested in the military social work connection, whether or not you were able to leverage those skills or where it kind of fit in. So thank you for sharing that. And I couldn't imagine what that experience must have been like.
It was very
and how it might have impacted your career. So that is very that's very telling. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Very.
So with that, Sheena here is, you know, based on everything she said, she is an expert. I would consider herself an expert on this field. So that's why I really wanted to bring her on. Like we said earlier, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So, you know, as everyone knows with the podcast, we try to bring some relevance to, you know, whatever our episode is. And as previously, when it was the month of May, mm-hmm. It was Women's Month. We did a Women's History Month episode. Or when it was February, we did it was Black History Month. And it just so happens Disney Plus released Wakanda Forever. So we did an episode based on that. So we've done that. And it just so happened that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And me and Josh was like, man, you know, this is something we really should talk about because it's something that's really expanding.
Right.
And me and Josh, like, we kind of have a little bit of different views on it. And it just so happens that when we talked about it, he showed me this, I think it was a tweet that Giannis had to a reporter. So, Josh, you want to talk about that a little bit? And I guess how we can expand on how that relates to this episode?
Sure. So there was a recent article that came out speaking about Giannis Antetokounmpo. And if you're not aware of who he is, he is widely considered one of, if not currently, the best NBA player in the world, or basketball player in the world, NBA player in general, of course, added to it. And he recently spoke about how he considered retiring in 2020, which at that point was one of the years you could almost consider to be part of his ascension into greatness and superstardom in the NBA.
Okay.
And I will just say a couple of quotes from it. He started with mental health. It's big for me. Everybody, no matter where I am, everybody is watching me. I don't think I have the time to turn it off. Be myself. Kind of just be me. In 2020, I was ready to walk away from the game. I had this conversation, yes, with the front office. And, you know, very normally, everybody is looking at me like I was crazy. You just signed the largest contract in NBA history and you want to walk away from the game and all that money. And it just kind of goes to show just how heavy that life is in the NBA and the feeling of pressure that he was probably experiencing, not to mention as we had kind of talked about earlier, the pandemic onsetting, NBA players having to migrate now to this kind of bubble ecosystem to play the rest of their games and have very limited social interaction with family, peers,
or none at all.
Distancing protocols, exactly. Couldn't visit anyone, couldn't see anybody. We don't know what that world was like, but it seemed like it was getting to not just him, but several other players in the NBA as well.
Yeah. I remember Paul George for the Clippers. We made fun of him because he's a really good, like, at that time, you want to say what, Josh, top 15, top 20 player at that time when he was in 2020, he was up there, and he gave himself a nickname, Playoff Pete, and because he really, he usually shows up during the playoffs, but in 2020 during the pandemic and they had the playoff in the bubble, he was playing very poorly, and we clowned him, gave him this nickname, Playoff Poo, and all this stuff, and he attested that really, like, his mental health was, like, really an issue. Like, he was so anxious, and he felt like he felt stuff. And when, if you're, like, in the field, like me and Sheena, like, he sounds like he was displaying signs of depression. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the time, like, mental health wasn't that big a deal, and people thought, no, you know, you're just making excuses. But I think 2020 has showed a lot of us, like, the real importance of mental health. And, like, for example, players were in the bubble, no interactions, like social distancing, you're experiencing all this cabin fever. And like LeBron, after LeBron won that year, he said, and I probably agree with it, regardless of what these other analysts says, like Skip Bayley's and such, like that's probably the hardest championship you're ever going to win because you played with nobody and you experienced a bubble for like 2 months. So you're like, for people, it may seem like, oh, like, it's easier to play with nobody than to play with 90,000 people watching you. But it's a difference, especially when that's all you know. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of taking that away from them. Mm-hmm. So like all that's been happening. And then the Giannis thing really just exploded. Josh, when did that article come out? Like, it was pretty recent.
Oh, within the last month. I think it was maybe April 18th. The 12th. Yeah, not too long ago.
So he retired or...
No, he continued to play. He's still playing. He actually just got bounced out of the playoffs by the Miami Heat. So shout out to the local team for y'all. And I know 305, y'all repping and all that good stuff. But he's still playing and playing at a very high level. But I'm sure that it took a lot of introspection and work to get his psyche back on the right track.
So Sheena, what do you think about now that more athletes are actually talking about this? Is, again, like, I feel like maybe it's just me, maybe I could be wrong, Josh, but I feel like since the pandemic, so since 2020, it's really become more of a thing. I think the only thing mental health related we ever heard in sports was like substance abuse. Mm-hmm. But I think now we're really talking about like anxiety, depression, and traumas and such. So how do you feel now that more and more athletes are coming about it? And the reason I'm asking you this is because I remember this conversation we had a few years ago. This was during the pandemic where, man, I wish I could pull this up. But remember we talked about the NFL team hired their first sports psychologist. And that was like a thing. And I was like, was it the Raiders or the Saints? It was one of them.
Well, I know the Raiders because this particular person they hired was a part of the new Leaders Council here in Broward County. And it was an organization that I actually thought about joining. And then I saw that he posted, he got the job. I was like, that's amazing. I'm not really that good with sports, but the team.
That's fine.
Yeah, no worries.
Black and gray. Isn't that the?
That's the Raiders.
Okay. Yeah. I believe that's who he was hired by. So I honestly think it's very good that athletes are now talking about it because think about it. Growing up, right? These athletes, even celebrities, you know, whoever, those that are in the spotlight, we see them as role models, right? They could do no wrong. We hold them like very high up on a pedestal. And for them to, talk about their mental health, you kind of realize, okay, like, I know this person is human just like me, but I consider this person like a superhuman because they've made it to whatever level that they made it to, right? So when they start talking about their mental health for, you know, us, for fans, we kind of get the opportunity to process it and say to ourselves, like, wow, they're going through that? That's the same thing that I'm going through. Or I know, you know, a family member that's experiencing the same thing that he's going through. So the fact that they are actually talking about it, I think it's wonderful because it opens up the door for other people, for fans to actually feel comfortable speaking about it as well.
Yeah, true, true. I mean, well, Josh, what do you think? What do you think, you know, if you want to piggyback on Sheena's?
I mean, it's definitely added notoriety, right? These figures in our lives that were seemingly impenetrable, had no issues living the glorious life of, you know, tons of money. I mean, you often hear about athletes and their contracts and millions of dollars and think there's no way they could be going through anything, or even that fan perspective, right? Like, we always hate on these athletes sometimes, and we just think, oh, I mean, that's just the price you pay about being a pro athlete. If you can't take the heat, get out the kitchen. But, you know, these really have long lingering effects, and it's good that they're actually being more open about it. I even think back to what Simone Biles, when she just bowed out of the Olympics because, like, stuff wasn't feeling right for her.
Yeah.
That's a and, brave move. She definitely took some heat for that.
And who was, what's the, Naomi? What's her last name?
Osaki.
She's another one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's messed up is, I mean, I feel like we're still relatively new in this space of this era of mental health, where if someone's playing bad, you know, it's my mental health, and people just think it's a lie, or there's always excuses when, you know, all I can say is, like, me and Josh, we were athletes. We played for teams. Me and Josh used to play basketball, like, you know, street ball. You have an argument or you have a bad day and you go play that, you know, at the court. You see how bad your game is, and people don't really realize it. Like, people don't have respect for athletes because, like you said, you get paid for this, so suck it up.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times I know people kind of believe that, you guys ever heard the term, money makes me happy? Like, some people feel as though as long as I, or when I make X amount of dollars, I'll be happy, right? When I make, or when I'm able to sign that contract, like, right, for athletes, when I'm able to sign that big contract, I'll be fine. You know, there's no way that I could be unhappy if I have X amount of dollars in the bank account. And that's not true, right? Because sometimes we can be so focused on the goal, so focused on trying to make it to a certain level, that we sometimes push our mental health to the side. You can only push it to the side for so long. And when it comes back, it makes its presence known. And you
have to
take a break.
Hey, man, like Biggie said, man, more money, more problems, right? Like, it's a thing, but it's true.
That's real.
And,
I think even, like, thinking of the reversal, right? Like, we as individuals or non-pro athletes who play sports, we do it to decompress from our issues from the day or for our own mental health. And that's our outlet in a lot of ways. But that's taken away from these athletes when this outlet for all of us is their lifestyle. It puts food on their tables. They do it for their families. And the stakes are high. Very high.
I mean, that's their job, right? I don't go to my job to release my mental health.
Absolutely not.
And if anything, then, you know, it may increase my anxiety and such, depending on the day.
Exactly. And to your point, Sheena, about having psychologists now on these teams and these franchises, that's a very significant milestone, I would say, in mental health building in nationwide, worldwide, et cetera. But what do you think about, like, that stigma that has always existed especially within the culture when it came to mental health. The notion of having to just suck it up and just do what you got to do, or even, and we had mentioned this and you had talked about this kind of off air, but one of your specialties is anger management and the stereotype of, you know, the angry Black man, angry Black woman, et cetera. What are your thoughts on some of those stigmas that exist, and how have you had to navigate those in your practice?
So stigma is a very huge word, right? But with stigma, I think there's just a lack of understanding of the illness, like of mental health, and of specific illnesses. And then I think there's also that fear that people have of those that have a certain mental illness, right? Because mental illness is not just, you know, depression or anxiety or anything like that. I know a lot of us kind of use those diagnoses very frequently, right? Even though some people don't necessarily understand what it means. But we also have to think about like those other diagnoses that are in the DSM. And I don't know if you guys heard about, what was his name? Jordan Neely, the young man that suffered from mental illnesses. I don't know what diagnosis he had, but he was on a subway, or he went onto a subway and he was like yelling that he wanted food, right? So he was tackled by a retired Marine and he put him in a chokehold and he passed away. Right.
I did hear that.
Yeah, that did come across my feed. I hadn't read the story yet, but
yeah,
that's so tragic.
Very. But even though he was having his moment, that was really no reason to murder someone. Right. Yes, he was yelling for food. Yes, he was yelling for water, but he wasn't a threat. And that's what I mean when it comes to like the fear of the person that has the mental illness. So those of us that have gone to school for it, or we have some type of knowledge about it, we will understand, okay, he's, you know, he's having a moment, you know, he's not being violent. Yes, he's yelling, but he's not a threat to us. So that whole fear of the person that has the mental illness, that plays a huge role and mental health, right? Because we don't know what the other person is going through if we're not trained in that. So I think for myself, if I were in that situation and being at a hospital, because I do work at a hospital as well in the ER and in the trauma unit, I work with those that are diagnosed with mental illnesses all the time, hallucinating, you know. They're yelling, they're screaming, they're, you know, multiple personality disorder. I see it all the time. Am I afraid? No, I'm not. And even when I'm leaving work for the day and they're standing on the corner, I'll walk right by them because I know that they're not a threat to me. You know, I'm not a threat to them. They're in their own world and I'm in mine. I do pay attention, you know, I'm aware of my surroundings, but it's not a fear that I have of someone who has a mental illness, diagnosed or undiagnosed. So I think that's very important. And then you mentioned also the strong Black woman or the strong Black male mentality. One good thing I can say about social media, it has given all of us a platform to be as vulnerable as we possibly can. And it gives the watchers a chance to connect with those on a different level. So there are a lot of people that talk about their mental health on social media. I ran across, you guys are probably familiar with this. I haven't watched the episode yet, but I plan to. I Am Athlete, I think that's the name of
I love that podcast. It's really good. Yeah, they do talk about mental health and such.
Yeah, so I was scrolling across my feed and I saw, I think this was the latest episode. I don't know, but it was a boxer on there. And he was talking about, I think he has a twin but he was talking about, you know, how he suffered from mental health. And the host, I can't remember his name, I'm sure you guys know, he always talks about his diagnosis. So I think a lot of Black men feel comfortable, or men in general, I think a lot of men feel comfortable, you know, listening to that particular podcast because it opens up the door for them to say, wow, you know, I suffer from that too. You know, I feel a little more, you know, comfortable knowing that it's coming from this particular athlete. Don't know if he's retired or not. I assume he is. But to hear an athlete talk about, you know, their own personal struggles, it gives them a chance to connect and be open. So I do plan to watch that episode. Once I watch it, I'm sure I have a lot more to say about it, but I have it saved to look at later.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If I don't know, me and Josh haven't decided, but if we do an IG Live as a recap to this, or YouTube Live as a recap for this episode, we should probably look at that, listen to that episode first, because I think the athlete you referred to is Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
And, yeah. He's been very open. I want to say bipolar, correct? I think that's what it is, Josh.
I'm not sure what his is. I thought it was borderline.
I know with him, he had a very checkered history when he was in the NFL, but he's been like, I know, like, after he retired, he'd seek treatment. He's all about, like, promoting strong mental health, and he has no problem, you know, explaining his diagnosis and even saying, hey, I have this. Because I know the one thing is, which I don't like too much, is like, once you're diagnosed with a mental health diagnosis, you're kind of stuck with that. Like, yeah. Like if you for whatever reason have like a manic episode, you're diagnosed as a bipolar, yeah, for the rest of your life. That's something I was taught in school, and when you read the DSM, that's like, you read the DSM-5 and it says just one episode. So like, that's to me, that's a huge negative stigma, because like, if I catch a cold, or if I like get some type of health diagnosis, once it's gone, it's gone. Like, it's like, it's a one-time thing and it's gone. Like, just because I had like a manic episode, like, why am I forever known as a bipolar person?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's because the whole medication aspect of it too, because going off your medication for an extended amount of time, you kind of end up at square one. But you also want to make sure that you have the proper diagnosis. You also want to make sure that you're going to someone who's very familiar with it, and who's not so quick to label you as, you know, being bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
That happens often, where people get misdiagnosed.
Yeah, you that bipolar, like, schizoaffective, right? Or like the popular ones we're gonna diagnose with you because they're so general, so broad.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think that's very important, finding someone who's licensed, who's not willing to just see you for that one session, because according to insurance companies, you should be able to diagnose in one session, right? But that's a whole nother story. But you just want to make sure that you find someone who's skilled, you know, in.
But Sheena's right on that, because I remember when I did an internship at a state hospital, I noticed one thing when I'm reviewing charts of all these patients. One of the popular diagnoses, like I said earlier, was schizoaffective disorder. And I was like, well, like, and I asked the person I was shadowing, like, well, what are the odds that everyone has this diagnosis? And I was like, no, that's a general diagnosis we give everyone. And I'm like, well, like,
At the time
I'm learning, I'm like, yeah, just because like they're here in at a state hospital doesn't mean they're displaying symptoms of like schizoaffective. Like, from what I learned from like studying for the boards and such, like, I wouldn't diagnose half those people with that disorder.
Right. Exactly. And honestly, it's probably for insurance purposes, because I can go off on a whole tirade about that. But, you know, unfortunately, you have to diagnose in order to get a reimbursement. And so with the state hospital, that's probably their protocol.
Hey, that's the government for you.
Yeah. You're telling it like it is, you know. One thing I wanted to ask both of you all, since you're both very much experts in the mental health space. No, we obviously say that representation matters in these spaces, right? Mm-hmm. But, and I'm not sure to what extent the DSM-5 has representation in it, but it seems like the template is already kind of set up in a way that is, again, I wouldn't say against the culture, but not culturally competent or culturally sensitive, if that makes sense. So what do you both think about some of the criteria and juxtaposing that with some of the social issues that people of color or even marginalized groups, no matter what walk of life they come from, are already kind of up against compared to, let's just face it, individuals who probably wrote those drafts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you asked that question because I believe it wasn't the board, but there was an organization, and Jay could probably help me on this one, that released a statement actually acknowledging the fact that the DSM was written a certain way and didn't take into consideration culture.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And I feel as though they only wrote that because of social media. And I say because of social media because they have their social media page, right? It's power in numbers. So if all of us are tagging this particular organization saying that this particular template is an unjust for us minorities, they have to act, right? You really can't ignore it. You really can't. And they went as far as releasing, I don't know if you saw this either, but they went as far as releasing like the stats of those who actually passed the exam, the state board that we have to take, right?
I did see that one. That's an alarming number.
Very alarming. It was like 90% of Caucasians that pass, right? First time go. And with minorities, it was like, what, 50%? Don't quote me.
Yeah, it was equivalent to like how like the SATs are like, if you're a minority, you don't do so well with SATs. Like that's exactly what the numbers came looking like, which is pretty, it's awful. Well,
that's a glaring disparity, right? Because then you're disallowing or you're delaying representation to even be available.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I knew a lot of people I hang up with predominantly minority people, especially with personally or professionally. And when I was studying for my boards and Amisha was studying together, and we knew a lot of people, minorities, was failing the test, who failed multiple times.
Struggling.
And like lucky for me, like I passed the first time, but like,
yeah.
But like I knew people who's like, man, I'm on my fifth, sixth, seventh time, and it's not a free test, it's a very expensive test that's out of pocket. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So, and like I saw that, and like, it's insane. Like it's Caucasians who are passing it. I don't know why. Right, I just don't know.
Yeah.
But I remember taking a test, and I thought whatever I studied on this test, whatever study guide, study packet, study prep I did, man, that test was completely different than what it was.
It really was. But I mean, it's definitely power in numbers. So that forced them to change the way that the exam is written. That forced them to incorporate new rules, new policies when it comes to sitting for the exam. One of the updates, you now have three options to choose from as opposed to four. So that gives test takers a chance to essentially pass on, you know, first time go. But I'm sorry, yeah, my dog is
that's okay.
No, you're
I mean, Josh, like a few episodes ago, like when we had our episode about masculinity and we had TJ, who's a part of the transgender community, I know he brought this up a little bit, but like, you know, she brings up the DSM, like gender dysphoria, I think that's the correct diagnosis. Like, that's a, like, you can say that TJ suffered from a mental health diagnosis because he would follow that criteria of gender dysphoria because he's part of the, because of how he identifies, which is insane, right? Like, that's not keeping up with today's, like, being transgender is not a mental illness. Whatever, if you have a disagreeing thought, that's on you. This is what I believe in. It's not, like,
right. That's wow.
But it's still there. And I remember, I don't know if you guys even heard this, but it's, I know it made its rounds. Like, people are trying to fight for pedophilia not to be part of the DSM. Like, it's not a mental illness. It was like, see, that's where people get a little.
Yeah, this world is very interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Yeah.
Everybody has a cause, right?
Yeah. So, so for us to transition, let's transition to this next topic. This is the one where this is going to be probably a little pushback from both sides, but I do want to hear it because I definitely have, I feel like I have a different perspective or a different way of thinking about this than Josh. Do everyone need therapy? And the reason for this is with the rise of mental health. And like, I know you guys both listen to the Breakfast Club, like, every now and then.
Yeah.
Like, Charlamagne the God's always like, he's really big on mental health, which is, you know, that's great. But he's like, everyone needs to have a therapist. Everyone needs to see therapy. There's this thing in between, like, social workers or therapists where, like, every therapist needs a therapist. Like, that's like a thing between us. So amongst you guys, and I guess I'll save myself for last, like, do you think everyone needs therapy?
I say yes. And I say yes because yes for yourself. And yes, if you're in a relationship, if you plan to be in a relationship, yes. I say that because therapy, there's no hurt. Like, there's no, you would not lose anything if you go to therapy as an individual. And it helps you, unless you're a super self-aware person, then maybe you don't need to go to therapy. But for the most part, I think everyone should at least give it a shot, because you will realize that you have these expectations, unrealistic expectations, right? Not just about others, but also about yourself. I think it gives you the opportunity to speak to someone who has no connection with you, right? Because sometimes we can, you know, go about our day, you know, like everything is fine. Like, everything is gravy. My world is fine. I'm in my own, you know, little bubble. I'm good. But when you sit down and actually have a session with someone who's licensed and who's trained, I think you will realize that you are avoiding a lot of things. Okay. There's this whole, I see it a lot on social media where people say, oh, you know, if I tell someone this and they, you know, they don't respect it, then I'm cutting them off. Why? Right? Why are you so quick to cut someone off instead of having a conversation? I think everyone deserves to have at least a conversation to get your perspective and to get the other person's perspective, because if that relationship is important to you, you're not going to lose anything by having a conversation with the other person. To me, it boils down to how important is the other person to you? You know, if you feel as though this person has no importance, has no place in your life, then fine. You know, but you can't live your life like that for the rest of your life. Okay? You go around cutting people off, you end up by yourself. So, yes, I think everyone at least needs to try it at least one time and see how it goes.
Okay, what about you, Josh? Again, I'll save myself for last.
And Jay, just to make sure I got it. So the question is, do I think therapy is for everyone?
No, do you think everyone needs therapy? Like I was saying before, like Charlamagne's like, everyone needs to see it. Like, he always promote. Like, I understand he's promoting because the success he sees from therapy, but he says everyone needs to see it. Needs to go to therapy. And for therapists and social workers is like every social worker or every therapist needs a therapist.
Okay.
So like it's like, so basically like everyone, every, like even a therapist needs a therapist. Basically everyone needs help.
Okay. My answer is yes. And the reason I say yes, and this part is completely personal, not objective at all, just keeping it a buck.
Okay.
The way I see mental health now, I see it as far more important than physical health, because it translates. I mean, the brain works every part of your body afterwards. It starts from the brain and just goes from there, unless it's reflexes. But if we have this standard to where we see a primary care doctor or a doctor once a year, then why shouldn't we do the same thing, at least for our mental health? Because I think it's just that important. I think it should be that routine at least. And then if there are other side effects that need to be evaluated, or if an individual is going through things, then maybe it should be more routine, of course, whether it's quarterly, monthly, weekly, however it needs to happen in order for them to, you know, take care of themselves, build that self-awareness and grow, then by all means. But I equate it to, if you need that tune-up for your body, why not have that tune-up for your mind?
Yeah. 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 And you don't have to wait until, you know, crap hit the fan before you decide to see a therapist, right? Maintenance is fine. You know, check-ins, fine. You have all of these resources around you, so you don't really have to figure out life by yourself. You have that support.
Okay, so I guess I kind of teased both you guys into this. So I'm gonna start with saying I like completely disagree. I do disagree, which is funny coming from the social worker, right? The licensed clinical social worker. So it's probably the unpopular opinion, but this is based on, I'll get a little personal, based on my experience and even my work. So I think therapy is a very strong tool to use. Like you said, Josh, you know, like once a month, it's recommended that you go see your primary care, you know, just for maintenance and such. But that's the thing, it's like recommended. Like no one's making you. You have to make that decision. And I think it's the same thing where I'll go with me first. I do not like the thought of being vulnerable. So that's a me thing. And that's how I grew up. And, you know, whatever my upbringing was, like I cannot get vulnerable. Like very few people have seen me vulnerable. I made the joke where I did go to couples therapy. We did that, and we also did the premarital counseling that you have to do. And like I told the therapist, like I have a shield. Like I refuse, like not refuse, but like you, like I have this very protective barrier that is gonna be very hard for you to crack, because I don't want to open that chest. I don't want to open that whatever I got locked up for personal reasons, for whatever reasons. And that really got me thinking that I did this, you know, I did the couples counseling and the premarital for whatever reason, but I didn't feel like I made that choice. And that's a lot of things. That's what I feel like with a lot of my people I work with, a lot of my clients is, where they're forced to see me for whatever mental health reasoning. And it's very unsuccessful, because you're just
like, it's a form of punishment.
You're forced to see me, right? Like it's not your choice or anything like that. It's you need to go see him for whatever reason. And how, and it's something like in the field, we call it, you have voluntary and involuntary clients. And, you know, like you have to go through multiple sessions until you could probably break that involuntary client to open up.
Yeah.
But it's like, they're not there for their own well-being. And like, I think therapy is something where you, when you're ready, you make the call. And when you feel like you can really open up and such, then yeah. And with the few sessions I did, I don't know if it was more helpful, because when I did get vulnerable, it wasn't for me. And I felt way more benefit from like working out. Like when I was really going through something a few years ago, like running truly did something for me. Like where I was more free and maybe in like, I don't know, I was on my own and like I had the thoughts and I just kind of replayed through everything. And I kind of understand some of the things I am going through, but maybe that's just a benefit of me being in the field.
Exactly.
So I understand that point. So that's why like, I would never tell anyone, no, you don't need therapy. It's, well, if you need it, you need to make that call. But for me, like, I remember when me and Josh used to play basketball all the time a few years ago when we used to all live down in Miami together. Man, like, those were, like, therapeutic for me. We were just 3 hours of just playing basketball. It's like, if I didn't play basketball, like, I felt weird. And even now, like, if I don't work out, something's wrong with me. Like, I need it for just, like for my mental health. I can have a stressful day and I run for an hour and I'm like, the weight's lifted off of me. So it's like, that's for me. But then there's people that, you know, like love music or love playing video games or like whatever their way of escape. I think you're finding something, a hobby that makes you escape from everything. I think that's just as beneficial as therapy, because, you know, if you're not going to open up to somebody, maybe something else can help you. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just a thing. The first step is knowing that it's okay to be vulnerable, and that's the hard part. And that even something I struggle with to this day.
Exactly. So, as a therapist, though, I would say I would kind of question you as far as your reasoning for being so protective of or not wanted to be so vulnerable. And I know a lot of people feel as though, you know, therapists are great at opening up Pandora's box, but have a difficult time closing it, right? They have a difficult time, you know, guiding the client into healing. That's the toughest part, because you can come into therapy and you have to be committed. You did say something earlier, you know, voluntary versus involuntarily, right? So if you're going to voluntarily go to therapy, you have to be, and I tell my clients this all the time, you have to be as honest and as transparent as you possibly can. Otherwise, what's the purpose of you going to therapy? If you're not ready to deal with all of these emotions and things that you have going on inside, and if you're not committed, it really makes no sense for you to start therapy, give all this information, right? We talked about everything from childhood, everything that you can recall, and then you stop coming to therapy. Now, what are you going to do with all of those emotions? We haven't really had a chance to focus on, you know, skills, coping skills, focus on, you know, teaching you how to, you know, have some type of emotional regulation or anything like that. So you have to be committed when it comes to going to therapy, right? And you have to be honest when you're going to therapy. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I mean, yeah, we'll get paid, you know, but it's not about the money. I think people that go into, you know, the field of being a therapist or being a mental health counselor or, you know, whatever title that they hold, we go into it for a reason, like I mentioned earlier, because of past experiences that we've had. And I agree with the whole statement that if you're a therapist, you need your own therapist too. And I agree with that because you soak in a lot of information from other people. And then when you're going through whatever it is that you're going through as a therapist, learning how to manage all of that.
Vicarious trauma.
Yes, vicarious trauma. There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. And even for me, like in my private practice, I mentioned earlier, I was deployed to Iraq. I was diagnosed with PTSD. And then for me to be a therapist, right, and listen to what my clients are experiencing, and then, you know, I have my things going on. You know, I know how to manage it, but there comes a time where if you're familiar with PTSD, you do have triggers. If you don't know your triggers, if you can't recognize your triggers, you can't help other people. So for me, having my own therapist is essential. That's like, that's one thing that I would never get rid of.
Wow. Jay, I think you actually brought a very interesting point to the table, and this notion of being sentenced to counseling or sentenced to therapy, especially when it comes to, you know, people of color, that Black, Hispanic, you're already overrepresented in the prison system. We're well aware of the school to prison pipeline. And so I almost think that that kind of adds to the stigma that we had talked about earlier about therapy or about counseling, that oftentimes, you know, we're sentenced to go to counseling. And once again, it's just a forced thing to check off a box to get yourself back on track. But it's not really something that you thought of or you considered on your own volition.
Yeah, I mean,
I was actually fortunate enough to
go
to therapy on my own volition, right? And not forced to do so. And I recognized the problem. I sought counseling because I didn't really know the appropriate steps to kind of go about it. And not that I was just looking for answers per se. I wanted to do the work. I just didn't know how to get started. Yeah. And that was kind of my journey. But a lot of people don't have that type of experience or that type of opportunity to do that for themselves. And so I really think that you might have just highlighted a maybe potentially a systems issue when it comes to how therapy is incorporated into, I guess you call it rehabilitation, when it comes to the justice system, which is another topic. But
I mean, Josh, the thing about it, how many people are saying, you can't tell me what to do. You can't force me to do this. Like, you already have that mentality.
Yeah.
So like that's my whole thing. I guess let me clean up a little bit what I wanted to say. I'm not saying therapy's bad or anything like that. I'm actually completely for therapy. I'm obviously in the field of mental health. It's just forcing somebody or saying you have to, that never just sits well with me having to. It's when you're ready, because obviously therapy is a powerful tool, and I understand that because I use different forms of therapy in my field. Not all the time. I'm not Sheena. I don't have a private practice, anything like that. But in my job, every now and then I have to whip out my toolbox and, you know, help out my clients with whatever I learned. So it's very powerful. But I think forcing someone or saying you need it, it's just the same thing. Like we don't see how many people really see their primary doctor all the time? They need to, but they don't.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now, I know that at my previous job, one of the things was if you don't want your insurance to increase, you got to go see that doctor. So it was like, so it's not like all of us went to go see our doctor for our own thing. It was like, no, I want my insurance to be as cheap as it is now. So it was like,
forced again.
You're forcing me. So I'm not doing it for like my own health. I'm not doing it I'm only doing it to benefit my pocket, not to benefit my health.
Yeah.
But that's the problem. I think that's the whole thing is, while I think therapy is very, very good, very powerful, I also think it's not the only thing. Mm-hmm. So I just think there's just so many things that we can do. But I think overall, I think we all could come to agreement to this is like, take care of your mental health.
Definitely.
Like, you know, like Absolutely. You don't, like, while you don't go to the doctor every day, like all the time, you know, you probably do things that you do, like you do subconsciously to improve your physical health. So do stuff like that with your mental health. Like, I know Josh is like into like meditating and such. Like, I haven't done it in a while, but like, I usually do it when I'm running, but I love doing yoga and I'm probably gonna start doing it again. Like, I really did a lot of yoga when I was training for a half marathon, and I realized how at peace I was with doing yoga. So I'm probably gonna go back to doing that once.
Yeah.
Everything kind of slowed down with the baby.
Oh yeah. Quick mindfulness right before this podcast. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Meditation is good too. That I actually focused on that in 2018 for a good year. And that was wonderful. I even had strangers like coming up to me saying, you know, you just your energy is just so peaceful. And I'm all like, really? Yes, meditation does work. And it does.
Oh yeah, for people, like if you have like Apple Music, Spotify, anything like that, like if you give yourself 20 minutes, like just search up like mindful meditation and you can just listen to like so many albums, all that. You can just listen like 20 minutes of that. You're so at peace. Yeah. Whatever noise they're using for the meditation in that album. I like using that a lot. When I was, I remember doing my internships, I would use that well with a lot of my clients. And I thought it was very helpful.
Mm. Nice.
So Josh, you want anything else you want to say, or should we start wrapping this up?
I think my internet started to slow up a little bit, got a little bit of a lag. Thought I heard my name in there.
No, yeah, I said any closing thoughts before we start wrapping up?
No, I mean, I think we've summed up a very well, you know.
Oh. You know, he did say that he was having some issues earlier with internet, so.
Oh, he almost made it to the end.
He almost made it. We made it. We're an hour and a minute in. So I guess while we wait for Josh's return, Sheena, any closing thoughts? So we can start wrapping this up.
Well, I just, you mentioned something earlier as far as should you let your mental health be known, your history be known. And I would say proceed with caution because it can be used against you. It's unfortunate, but it can be used against you. So I think, you know, depending on the platform that you have, you know, the role that you play in this world, in life, I think you should proceed with caution and speak it to those that you really trust, and those who know how to take care of you, who know how to, you know, make sure that you're okay, you know, and it's coming from a good place. There you go.
Got you back, Josh. Right. We almost made it.
I was telling Jay I had internet issues all day, and I was working remote too, so it was a problem. But
hey, man, it's not gonna be edited out, man. We're gonna just keep that. Man, we're gonna go show how genuine this podcast really is. Yeah, things happen.
Hey, you know what? I can go back to Cox Internet with this with legitimate proof.
Follow my YouTube. I got proof.
Exactly.
So Sheena was just talking about like she was summing it up because something I said earlier to her about should you be more open with your mental health, and she's, you know, basically saying be mindful because it can be used against you. It could be weaponized, unfortunately. Okay. Is a better way to sum it up. Right. But I guess, Josh, for you, any closing thoughts for this pod?
Nothing too grandiose. Sheena, I think that was a really great take as far as, you know, at the end and being open. I definitely agree with those sentiments. But I think this was a much needed podcast. I'm glad we had it. This has been a great conversation. I hope it's opened some eyes as far as the importance of mental health with a little bit of each of our stories in mental health, whether it's career, whether it's personal. Life is hard. Yeah. It's not easy. And so, you know, however you need to do to take care of yourself, do it, please.
Absolutely. I agree. 100%.
Can't say it better. I was actually going to say that, take care of yourself, but you beat me to it, Josh. So, I'm glad that Mental Health Awareness has a month. So it's funny because like me and Josh are always trying to find a way to incorporate relevance to our podcast. And we're like, what do we talk about? Because we have future episodes already planned up. I was like, what do we do for this one? Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I put May Awareness Month. And the first one I popped up, I was like, there we go. It was unanimous. Like I showed y'all my job. Just like five different awareness months, and we both were like unanimous. Like, yo, we're doing mental health.
Yeah.
Hey. So, and to any of our listeners, if you're on Apple, Spotify, and you're looking for those lo-fi clips or mindfulness meditation ambient sounds, find genuine content, please, and give us a like, review, subscribe, follow. You know the whole deal.
So, Sheena, I want to, again, thank you so much. I want to show my gratitude for you doing this, because I know you didn't have to spend an hour of your time. From here on out, I know we've known each other for years. But I'm glad that you met my co-host, Josh, and now you're officially part of the Genuine Content family. So this is great. I'm glad to give you a platform to let everyone know about your passion, and hopefully people that you would follow with, you know, they listen to this because it's a very good episode. They can hear all three of our perspective, and you know, they can hear our previous episodes, because each episode is very distinct and very actually relevant to society. We made sure we found a way to have relevant topics and very not controversial topics, but very thought provoking conversations. What we have in each of these episodes.
Nice. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it. My passion, so I'm here.
No problem. And then for any future episodes, I'll probably talk to you and see whether we get you in for another episode, or whether maybe you know someone, you can refer someone for future episodes. We'll keep in contact with that.
Of course. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Sheena, one last time, if you shout out your business, your practice.
Yes. So the name of my private practice is Prospect Institute. We are located in Pembroke Pines, Florida, in South Florida. I am licensed for the entire state of Florida, and I do offer teletherapy. That, you know, live a good distance away from the office, but in person, via Zoom, I am available. I am an anger management specialist as well. I do hold group classes. So if you're court ordered, right, that voluntary versus involuntary. So if you're court ordered to attend anger management, I am available for that as well. And you can follow me on my Instagram at prospect_.
Yep, for all the YouTube watchers, we got it right there, right under.
All right.
Hey Josh.
Sixers look, take one more L like they did the other day, I might be giving you a call, Sheena.
Hey Josh, hey. Before we end it, man, I'm geeking out because it's so cool. I can do this and like this. the tags are like right there. So, all right, man. Josh, man, take us out, man.
All right. Well, everyone, it's been a great episode of Genuine Content, Genuine Conversation, Genuine Vibes. We appreciate you all for listening. Stay tuned for future episodes and stay tuned for our IG posts, Facebook posts for further information. Right, peace out.
Thank you.